Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast for episode 48 on October 28th, 2013. I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Adam Forrestal.
And that's 2 weeks in a row I've gotten the intro right.
First try. I'm impressed. We're going to start keeping notches on the table and see how far we can go with this.
The key is just me going slower.
That's right. Taking a couple of deep breaths and getting the show off to a good start.
Exactly. So. It's been a busy week.
Well, it's been a mediocre busy week. We certainly had a couple of big announcements from a couple of big companies.
Yep.
We had a lot of announcements from one company, but we knew that was coming.
Yep. We didn't have any announcements from Google. Because
I'm going to try and verify that. I was sure they had some kind of press conference scheduled for the 20th. No.
It might have been...
24th. I'm sure they had one scheduled for the 24th.
It could have been an earnings call, because not only last week was Microsoft's earnings call, today actually was Apple's earnings call.
Yeah.
So not only do we have last week's Apple keynote, we have the earnings call from them. So while you're searching for that, let's...
Google Play event, October 24th, but there's no record of actually discussing anything that I can see. It's just...
Huh.
Just invite. All these companies are saying, yep, we got invites, it's a real thing, this is happening.
And
but
then,
I can't find any record of any news actually having been announced at that thing.
Yep.
Oh, well, sorry, Google. That's cool. Let's carry on.
Yep. All right. Well, let's dive into the elephant in the room, Apple's new stuff and their earnings call. I want to start off with the earnings call just because it's a good indication of how they're doing.
And it's the most newsy of the news.
Exactly.
The rest is going to be a lot of product discussion.
Yep. So Apple's Q4 results, I love the title from this one from The Verge, revenues rise, but profits fall. Let's just dive into it. They've always been showing huge money making. I don't think they've, in the past 10 years, they've had a negative quarter. Basically, what they're making per, the big news from all this is what they're making per device is going down. So they're making less revenue per device, if I'm reading this correctly, but they're making more profits, which means that they're selling more devices in general.
Right. That's it. That's what pretty well.
Which is a good thing, because it means that we'll hopefully still continue to see reduction in their prices at least a little bit.
Well, yes and no. A lot of this, I think, comes from seeing some of the average prices of available devices go down. The new iPhone 5S is the most expensive iPhone they've ever put out, but they also put out a less expensive alternative to it at the same time, and there's still plenty of iPhone 5s and 4Ss floating around out there for new subscribers as well.
Yep.
The iPhone end of this actually isn't as shockingly different as I was expecting. Last quarter, the average iPhone selling point was $581.
Which is still significantly high.
Pretty high. And this quarter, it went from $581 to $577.
Yep.
So we're not talking about a huge drop. I mean, over the course of a million devices, that's $4 million. We're not talking about nothing here, but it's not like it's a huge plummet for Apple. It is the lowest it's ever been.
But it probably means that they're selling more of the middle and low end devices.
Absolutely.
One of the things that was in the earnings call was that, for example, Tim Cook has never seen the 5C, for example, as a low-end device. They saw it as the middle end. So they've still got the 4Ss and 5s floating around at the cheaper price point, and then you've got the 5C and the 5S as your middle and your high end.
Right. And I should mention the caveat of the iPhone, the minor change in the iPhone price of $4, is significant to Apple in that the iPhone, by a factor of more than double, is the best-selling Apple product out there.
Yep.
They sell more than twice as many iPhones than the next nearest competitor, which is the iPad, which in turn sells more than twice as many of the next thing down, which is all Mac computers combined.
Yes.
Which then outsell iPods. So that's it's a hit to their best-selling device. How many devices sold was it? 14 point, that's iPads.
Yeah.
So if it's more than double, 33.8 million iPhones times an average $4 price reduction is $130 or so million of revenue.
Yep. But if they're selling more of their low-end devices that makes up for that, then it does show that they're it's almost a better position for them to be in if they're moving more devices.
The low, yeah, they're moving. It means they're moving devices, but they're just making less money off them. But that was the summary we started with. So we're good.
But I mean, it's also one of those things where if they are moving more devices, that means that there are potentially more people coming into their ecosystem, or at least more people. Because you are going to have turnover from people renewing and upgrading.
Yep.
But if there are increased number of devices entering the market, then that tends to mean that there are more more new subscribers to sort of the Apple brand, at least for the cell phones.
I would say, good, brand was the right word. You corrected yourself there. I think ecosystem is a strong word, because you can certainly get an iPhone without being a part of the Apple ecosystem.
Yes.
Ecosystem, at least for me, implies that you're using maybe a Mac or some other set of Apple products. That
maybe a phone and an iPad.
Yeah, you get the cohesion between devices. I'm a great example of this. I have one Apple product.
Yep.
I have my iPhone, and everything else is something else.
And you work just fine with it.
Well, and I have no interest in using Apple's ecosystem, but I do like their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so bought into apps at this point that it would be a huge financial hurdle for me to try and move myself over to Android or something else anyways, but that's not the discussion we're having. Anyways, so no, it certainly means there's people interested in the iPhone, which is not a surprise, I suppose.
No.
Certainly is impacting their earnings. Is there anything here about what iPads are doing right now? The price of iPads is, I'm going to say, on average, is actually going to go up.
Probably.
Because the new iPad mini is $100 more expensive than the previous iPad mini.
Yep.
We'll come back to what's involved in a new iPad mini in a minute.
Mm-hmm. I dare say you'll probably, as much as there probably will be a net increase in that sort of that price for the average, I dare say you're going to continue to see more of them being sold, especially with the full-size iPad aside. The mini has at least recently been showing that it's been carrying a lot more market weight just because of its size and what it's been doing.
Mini's a big seller.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
So
given that the price of that's going up, we'll probably see the average cost of iPad devices go up over the coming quarters. That's something we can expect.
Yep.
What about Macs? That's an interesting one, actually. We're going to have to go through what's in these new Macs.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Some prices are going up.
Some
prices
are going down.
It'll be an interesting turn of events.
Well, do you want to delve into the hardware stuff while we're talking about it?
That's relevant to this discussion at this point. Let's talk about the hardware.
All right. So basically, Mac outlined all of their updates. Let's start off with the iPads. At the keynote last week, they announced two things. The new iPad mini.
Yes.
It's coming with a Retina.
Right.
A Retina display. And that's primarily why the price is increasing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the big reason. There are certainly some internal technology reasons it's going up as well. I'm sure that A7 chip isn't nothing to manufacture. It's going to have that new the M7 or the motion processor, whatever it's referred
to
as.
M7 co-processor.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not no cost, certainly.
But if they're already producing them, it's
right.
Six and one half dozen.
There's no R&D for it. They're just mass marketing it. They're just mass producing it at this point.
Yep.
But that means that unlike the previous, carry on. Talk about the next iPad first, and then I'll make the connection between the two of them in a second.
The new full-size iPad, the dropping iPad 2, 3, 4, and they're changing the name to the iPad Air.
Which drives me up the wall, but carry on.
We'll move on past the name. The main reason why they're doing this, though, is because they've managed to shave off 0.4 of a pound in weight, which is significant when you're dealing with a device that size.
If it's a device under 2 pounds, 0.4 is at least 20%. I mean, that's huge.
That's huge.
As a percentage, that's significant.
Yep. And they're also shaving off, what was it, 2 millimeters?
2 millimeters, again, you're talking about a device that was already under a centimeter thick. So shaving off 2 millimeters, you're down to, again, another 20% decrease.
Smaller.
It's huge.
Meanwhile, you're dealing with the more powerful processor,
yep.
The co-processor.
The A7 and M7 have been included in that from the iPhone 5S.
Yep. You still got a Retina display in there.
Yes, you do.
Which means you still need to have a significant amount of battery space in there to drive it.
Which they've somehow pulled off,
now,
allegedly.
Well, allegedly what they're saying is that the A7 is that much more power efficient, so they can deal with a slightly smaller battery and still get the same performance and life out of it.
Very good.
move on to the other hardware?
Well, no. Let's keep talking about iPads. So okay. what that means for those of you playing the home game is that unlike the previous iPad Mini and iPad, which were differentiated not just by their size but by their hardware.
Yep.
The new iPad Mini actually is just a small version of the new full-size iPad.
Yes.
The hardware on the inside is
the same. Well,
with the exception of maybe the cameras and some other kitschy stuff, I haven't actually compared everything, but the important stuff, the RAM, the processor, the storage, it's all...
identical.
It's all the same. Which means you really are just dealing with a smaller version of the full one, which also accounts for some price difference as opposed to just being a Retina display.
Yep.
There are a few things about these releases that have somewhat infuriated me.
do tell.
Well, the first one is the adoption of the iPad Air name. There was no reason to do that. The adoption of the MacBook Air name differentiated the MacBook Air from the MacBook. If you're going to introduce the iPad Air and eliminate the original iPad.
But they're not, because they've even said they're going to keep... This is the interesting thing. They're not going to keep the iPad 4 around or something like that. They're keeping the iPad 2 around
yes.
as their
old,
the inexpensive
yeah.
option.
It still strikes a bad chord with me. You need something to really make it stand out. I mean, I think you're going to have issues with branding, having people thinking that the iPad Air is some kind of co-product to the iPad, the way that the MacBook Air was a side option as to the MacBook.
Yeah.
But people who come into a store looking for the new, fully featured top-end iPad are actually looking for the iPad Air. So I think that distinction wasn't necessary. I wish they'd just called it the iPad 5. Everyone can follow numbers.
Unless they're trying to ditch the number system.
They're going to call it something different every year? Or are we
going
to have...
Or they're just going to be iPad Air.
Yeah, iPad Air, and then they're going to have the, just like the Max, the late 2013 model, the mid-2014
yeah.
model. Okay.
But to most consumers, it's just the iPad.
Yep. All right. Next thing that bothers me, by this particular release of iPads, they have invalidated every iPad accessory ever made to this point. This is something they did between the iPad 1 and 2 when they changed the shape. The 2, 3, and 4 were all close enough that every case and every dock and every stand, everything...
Not true. The connector.
Fair enough. The
3 and 4.
The adjustment to the Lightning connector, but certainly every case.
Yes.
Or anything that was designed to be form-fitted around the iPad for whatever reason, all fit exactly the same way.
Now, to play devil's advocate, that's the same thing that we experienced from going from the iPad
1 to the 2.
Two.
Yep, certainly.
The 3GS to the 4s,
the
4 and the 4S,
yep.
And then the 4S to the 5 and the 5C, well, 5C and 5S.
All right. I guess we've started expecting it in phones every couple of years, and certainly the Android producers are all producing slightly different screen sizes year
yep.
over year over year.
And if you're buying if you're only buying a new iPad once every, let's say, 4 years, if you're not investing in each new revision,
yeah,
it's not the end of the world.
I disagree. If you're not investing in each new revision, that's where you have to start re-accessorizing every couple of years. I know plenty of people who were extremely happy that their cases and several other accessories from, say, their iPad 2 were completely fine on their iPad 4. The only thing they had to worry about was whether they could dock it, but there's basic adapters that take care of that for you.
Yeah.
The iPad Mini, by being made thicker as a virtue of having the Retina display, is now not going to fit in all the old iPad Mini accessories.
Right.
So here we are, we're just in the second generation of the product, and they didn't maintain the form factor.
And that's not even including the, not the smart, well, smart cases, but the smart covers, the magnetic, the ones attached to the magnets the side.
Oh, do they not even fit?
They're completely new because of the thickness difference.
Yeah, that's, I mean, yes, it has to happen every once in a while, and when Apple switched from 30-pin to Lightning, I was one of the first people who said, you know, it's time. They've been using 30-pin for 8 or 9 years. It was time for a new connector. I understand.
Yep. And even with the iPad, like the full-size iPad, we've had it for, what, 3 years now?
Four years? Full-size iPad was introduced...
2009?
That sounds too early. I want to say it was introduced in 2010.
Okay. So, but let's say we're dealing with the third year of a device.
Okay.
The third year of a device, I don't have as big an issue if you're changing the full physical thing. Like
yeah.
like you said with the lightning plug, you're dealing with a very tiny thing. You can buy a small adapter.
Yeah.
But if you're dealing with the full physical thing,
yep.
I don't see as big a problem with it. The iPad Mini, definitely that's a problem where you're dealing with this is just the second version and you're completely changing the form factor.
You used the argument yourself a minute ago. That's what the iPad did.
True.
I don't know. It irks me. It's too bad, I guess, is just the thing. Yes, you can't argue progress. We're going to a smaller form factor. It's lighter, it's thinner. Great. I just I wish they were able to maintain some of the accessories. And if they just made it thicker, could the battery have just been bigger? That would have been awesome. But
yeah, well,
here we are.
I will touch on one story related to the iPad mini. In the earnings call today, Tim Cook, this is something Apple usually doesn't admit. They've admitted that the iPad mini, the Retina screens may be scarce around launch and Christmas time.
That's the new mini?
That's the new mini.
Yep.
Which is interesting to see that they are talking about something being scarce. Usually their supply chain is such that there aren't huge product issues.
Well, and even if they know a product's going to be scarce, they're usually pretty quiet about it.
Yeah.
I remember when the Retina Pros were released last year, the first generation Retina Pros were released, within a couple of hours, they were a 3-week delay. And at its peak, I think they hit 5-week delay on shipping because so many people wanted one.
Yep.
So even in a case where people are going to have a hard time getting their hands on one, Apple's usually pretty quiet about that being the case. So it does shock me that they came right out and say it. And the fact that they did come right out and say it to me means that it's going to be really bad.
It's going to be bad.
It's going to be like a two month delay or something. Yeah, it's going to be like it's 2007 and we're doing the Wii all over again. Like it's going to be people are coming in at Christmas trying to get Christmas presents. And you ever see the movie Jingle All the Way?
Yeah.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to find the doll. It's the action figure, excuse me. It's going to be like that. We're going to have people fighting over them. So it'll be interesting to see anyways what happens.
Hopefully there will still be old stock of original iPad minis.
Yeah.
For people that it might not make a difference if they've got the newest one.
Plenty of people will feel that way, I'm sure.
Especially if they keep the price point on those. Well, I'm assuming they'll keep the price point, the lower mark.
If anything, that would just go down, right? Push it maybe from $329 to $299. I mean, I think it is $299 in the States, but it's $329 up here.
Yep.
So, I don't know. We'll see what happens anyways.
Yep.
It's don't count on finding a new iPad mini, folks, I suppose is the warning.
Yep. All right. So, moving on to their full-sized, ones. Not too much to say about the Mac Pro.
Let's come back to the Mac Pro. Let's do the other ones first.
Okay. The MacBook Pro lineup. So their professional line of laptops.
Can I get a sigh in real quick?
Sure. And I know exactly what that's about too.
And you can't hear this, but I'm also rolling my eyes.
So
let's carry on.
So they've completely overhauled the MacBook Pro line. There is, as of now, only one non-Retina device, and that is the 13-inch.
Last year's 13-inch. Just qualify that. They didn't release a new traditional-style non-Retina MacBook Pro.
At least they didn't make it white.
What dashing bastard clink called that?
I think you did.
I think some very clever person said that we were not going to see new traditional models this year.
No, which is fine. It is good to see them dropping the price of it, even if it is last year's device. They'll probably at least get sales out of those.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good product. I mean, when they had the old plastic shells, they kept the white ones around for a few years and actually sold them as primarily their educational based
device. That's right. I remember them doing that. They stuck around about 2 years for education use past. They stuck around for about 2 years after they were discontinued for the general public. They were available for educational institutions,
which is actually a good idea, because if they're fairly cost not prohibitive to build, and you can get more students with them spending less money, they're already spending a lot of money on university. It's a win-win.
If you can get schools interested in buying them in bulk for their students, it's a good move by Apple. So maybe with the actual discontinuation of the 2009-2010 white polycarbonate MacBook,
yep,
perhaps the new 2012 13-inch Pro becomes the
sort of the de facto,
the new educational one. That I hadn't thought about that. That could be the case.
So that will be interesting to see. Anyways,
okay. So we still have 2012 13-inch MacBook Pros.
Yes,
one traditional style model
with a CD drive.
It's the only worth mentioning. It's the only computer in Apple's line that still has a CD drive.
Yep.
When they kill this computer,
will be CD-less.
Optical drives are a thing of the past for Apple.
Which is interesting. Well, it kind of makes sense, but
it does. Talk to me about Retina Pros, Jamie.
So there are now all Retinas. You've got, I believe, 4 13-inch and 4 15-inch on the store. I'm pretty sure
is that many.
I think they list 4.
I'm gonna guess it's 3 15-inch. It might even be 2.
give me a second to boot it up here. Anyways, the thing that pisses me off, I'm gonna get this out of the way in the first and foremost way. Oh, sorry, you're right. It's 3 and 2.
Damn.
Anyways, the thing that pisses me off the most about it is that all of your quote unquote pro line of laptops, only one of them has a discrete graphics card.
That's what got under my skin too. So let's talk about the updates. We'll come back to these issues in a minute.
All right. So all of them now have Haswell chips in them,
which is a great upgrade for. Not necessarily for performance, because Haswell isn't dramatically better than Ivy Bridge.
But it's better for battery.
By a mile.
And that's the key.
Yep.
They've been able to shrink them a little bit, as far as I remember. So they're a little bit smaller, because they can get better usage out of the battery that's already in there.
The physical dimensions of the Retina Pros?
I believe they shrunk them. No?
They're identical.
Oh, okay.
Carry on.
Anyways.
Scratch that last 30 seconds.
Yeah, scratch it. All of them obviously come with the built-in Iris graphics, with the two 15 inches of having the Iris Pro.
Correct.
On the Haswell chip. All of them have PCIe-based flash, starting at 120, going all the way up to 512.
Which is the same brand new super speedy flash memory they introduced for the MacBook Air
yep.
Back in July.
But I don't think it's the new stuff that's going in the Mac Pro.
I don't think it's the new crazy go nuts speed stuff that's going in the Mac Pro.
No. We'll come back to that. Yeah. All of them come with Thunderbolt 2, as far as I remember. And that's about it.
All right. I think you're right. I think that just about does it.
That's the guts of it. Basically, they all got a CPU upgrade. They're all now flash. They're all now the Retina display. And they're all...
Well, the Retina Max, so they were all Retina display.
Yep.
Give you a hard time about that.
Oh, whatever.
All right, so let's talk about one thing that is going to get under my skin. And that is that last year, when they introduced the 15-inch Retina Pro for the first time,
yep.
They all shipped, every single one, shipped with the NVIDIA 650M. The 13-inch didn't.
Yep.
The 13-inch came with the integrated, but the 15-inches came with the dedicated card.
I suspect there's a reason for why they're doing this.
Oh, I know there's a reason for why they're doing this, but let me tell you why this bothers me.
Yep.
When they shipped them, the original benchmarks demonstrated that the 650M was not happy pushing the resolution of the Retina Pro.
Yep.
People were complaining, even in some cases, about Facebook pictures loading slowly because the graphics card simply couldn't keep up to it. When they released the 13, they dropped the graphics card entirely and were relying on Intel's integrated solution to power the high-res screens,
yep.
which, to my knowledge, worked fine. This year, they introduced Iris. The Iris graphics on the new Haswell processors is pretty impressive.
It has shown really good benchmarks.
It certainly has. It's a huge step up over the Intel integrated graphics solution from last year.
Yep, especially considering that these are built into the CPU.
Yes. Oh, no, it's fantastic, which means all your 13-inch models are going to actually get an upgrade. They're all that much better graphically for having the Iris graphics, so that's great.
And supposedly Apple is doing some under-the-hood software stuff to help it along as well.
Perfect.
With the new operating system.
So the problem then becomes the 15-inch models.
Correct.
The new Iris Pro graphics sported by the 15-inch models is extremely impressive for being an integrated solution. I'm not knocking it. It was really well done. However, in all graphic settings and benchmarks that I've seen, Iris Pro clocks lower than last year's 650M.
Which means either the software is doing a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah, it's either that much better, or we have some seriously graphically underpowered Retina MacBook Pros.
Yes.
Which may not be a problem for average consumer.
Joe Q public, yeah, who's not doing too much.
Absolutely.
But assuming that the Facebook pictures load on a timely fashion, yeah, and you don't have problems like that, you should be okay.
$2,000 Facebook machine. So, but
you start getting into photographers, videographers.
People who are actually using it for professional use, I think, are going to have a hard time doing it with the Iris Pro. They're going to want that 750M, that NVIDIA card that's only available in models starting at $2,650.
Yep.
And that's a huge amount of money to pay just to have that perk.
Now, that being said, it is, I mean, you are kind of differentiating between the average user and the professional user.
I absolutely am. However,
the professional user is going to look at 25, if Mac is their system and they look at 2650, they'll go, okay.
Okay. However, what's the de facto king of...
The average user?
What's the de facto king of media editing software?
Adobe.
Adobe CS6 or Creative Cloud or whatever you happen to subscribe to. Do Adobe and Apple get along these days?
Not really.
Not really. Adobe's made a little, few more enhancements to their Windows suite because Apple had that reputation of being better for editing than Mac than Windows did. The Windows tools are basically identical now.
Yeah,
there isn't really a difference between CS6 or Creative Cloud. Forgive me for between the two platforms.
Yep,
which means there isn't really incentive if you're using Adobe. Apple has plenty of their own tools like Logic and. The one that
Final Cut Pro.
That's what I was going to say. The one that TrueGrit was made on. They have their own set of tools that are Apple only. I understand that.
And to be fair, they are. I would at least consider them in line with what Adobe.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
They're great. They're great software.
Not arguing that. But if I'm an Adobe user, I can either get a MacBook Pro for $2,650, or I can get literally. You ready for this? Literally the same computer from Dell for $2,200.
Yep.
I can save myself $450 straight off the top. And literally get the same machine powered by Windows 8.1.
Now, that's assuming that your workflow will allow you to switch to Windows and all of those other things.
Yep, but even including stuff like the high-res graphics, the long-ass battery, the super thin form factor, basically it's all there top-down. It even includes a touchscreen, and it's significantly less. What really was nice about the Retina Pros when they were first released was that nobody else was doing it.
Yep.
But if other companies are going to start doing it at a huge price reduction, that's 20%.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough for me to see these things move.
Oh, yeah.
The Dell model, I should qualify. The Dell model is equivalent to that 2650. It actually includes the 750M graphics card.
Yeah.
And it even has more RAM. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It has the 16 gigs. Forgive me.
See, what I'm actually surprised about is that there are so many 13-inch models when you've already got a 13-inch MacBook Air.
It's funny for me seeing the distinguishing features between the two 13-inch models, between the three 13-inch models. It's... Yes, the amount of storage you get goes up every time, 128 to 256 to 512. But what's weird is the other upgrades they make. So, like, the base model is 1350, jumps to 1550 for double the storage and double the RAM. And then you go to 1850 to double the storage again and get a faster CPU. It just... The doubling the storage makes sense. It's the same model they've always used, the same model they use for iPads. It just seems like the other upgrades are arbitrary. Hey, we're going to throw some RAM into this to make the value there. Hey, we'll upgrade the CPU to make the value here. It's an interesting set of upgrades to me. I don't know why I find it so funny. Anyways, it is nice to see Retina quality screens. On all of them, the Retina Pros. But it is nice to see the 13-inch Retina drop into the realm of practicality for the average user.
Yeah.
It's a lot more reasonable at 1350. Well, it's just over what?
The Air.
Well, it's just over the air, and it's just over what the MacBook, 13-inch MacBook Pro from last year, the traditional model, was before the most recent price drop.
Yep.
So it's really great to see Apple pushing Retina for the average consumer because everybody loves having those high-res screens.
Yep.
But some of the decisions they've made as you go up the line start making me think there's some weird stuff going on.
Well, and the fact that they don't even offer, say, the GeForce card in the top end of the 13,
yeah,
really annoys me.
Doesn't surprise me because they never have.
Well, and the other reason why I know why they're doing this and why they're only offering it in one device is because they're making the move, and this is what's been criticized in the past with to get the space and the size down, everything is embedded on the motherboard.
Right.
It has to be built in from the ground up.
You have one issue, you're paying for a whole new computer.
Exactly. So it makes sense to not include that, but it's really irritating to not see the ability to see someone play games
right.
on a 13-inch model.
Yep.
And, you know, even for me, all of my professional stuff is Mac-based.
Yep.
I would love to be able to continue to game on a Mac laptop.
Sure.
I don't want to have to buy a separate laptop just for gaming.
Games on a Mac.
Oh, bite me. That's what boot camp's for.
It would have been interesting if they could have to see if there was a CPU option that would have included Iris Pro for the top end model.
That would also
that may have curbed some of your issues. There will be a decision people have to make when they buy one of these things. The 256 gigabyte 13-inch MacBook Air is actually available for $50 less than the 128 gig Retina Pro.
Yep.
So you have to decide whether you want the form factor and the crazy battery life available in the MacBook Air, or do you want the Retina style screen available in the Retina Pro.
Yeah, and who knows, next year we might see Retina Airs, which would throw a whole other wrench
we'd have to have a whole discussion about it.
Yep.
Interesting, they all adopt. It's nice to see a big company trying to force adoption of wireless AC, because that's kind of where we're going.
Yep.
But otherwise, I'm really not
USB
super...
USB 3, Thunderbolt 2.
Yeah. I'm really not super impressed with the Retina Pros, but we'll see what the reaction is as we go forward and see how... Next earnings call, we'll see how they're selling.
Exactly.
Now, you didn't want to touch on this too much, but I really want to talk about the new Mac Pro.
Oh, no, I do.
Okay, then we do. We're in agreement then. Let's move on from the MacBook Pros and talk about the Mac Pro, the new desktop, which we didn't really learn a whole bunch more about this time around.
No. We did figure out that the graphics cards they're putting in there are probably built in house.
They're probably built in house. I mean, they are
built dedicated.
Yeah, they are AMD Fire Pro cards, but given the configuration and the shape, they're probably proprietary Apple.
More interestingly, I saw an article. I'll try and find the link for it. Apparently, those graphic cards are going to be able to be replaceable.
Yeah, I saw that too, which means they're going to have their own form factor ones that are available for purchase. Although, maybe you have to go to an Apple store to get them. Maybe it's just something they do at their depot.
But theoretically, that could also mean that a company like Otherworld Computing that put out third-party solid states with the Apple connectors,
yep,
you might be able to get a traditional graphics card like an
adapted in. Absolutely. That's clever thinking.
So for someone like me, you get the lowest end of the new Mac Pros, and you put in an NVIDIA graphics card,
sure,
so that you can play games.
Well, this is actually an interesting thing to see, because the Mac Pro traditionally has been the only upgradable Mac product kind of out there. It's a traditional tower. You can slot in new cards. Go for it.
But, you can with these. You can slot in RAM, hard drive, and graphics cards.
Well, that's what I mean. So it's significant that despite going with the new design that really did look proprietary, and I was thinking it was going to be like other Apple products and just be a sealed, locked-down system that you'd have to buy a new one every couple of years, it is interesting to see that they are continuing their Mac Pro tradition of allowing significant upgrades in the box, which is a big deal to me.
Yeah.
I am curious to see what the new Fire Pro video cards benchmark at. There's going to be a balance they have to walk to keep price down but keep performance high.
Well, they've already seemed to have done that alone with the lowest end model that has two of these Fire Pro cards sits at 3100.
But we don't know where they bench. We don't know what the performance of the Fire Pro cards and the lowest end model is like.
True.
Because they're proprietary.
And they haven't even released the stats for their highest end model either.
Absolutely. Fire Pros are all over the map. Really cheap ones, and there's kind of not really such a thing as a cheap Fire Pro, but the least expensive ones, which are in the $100, $150 range, are not great performers. They do the job, but they're not particularly good. So it'll be interesting to see where in the scale they land, because, I mean, at the top end, Fire Pro cards can cost $4,000 and are incredible.
Yep.
So anyways, it'll be interesting scale. The tower itself is that gorgeous cylinder they showed us in July.
Yep. It looks slick.
It's going to be a very visually impressive unit.
I want to see the stats on the cooling system.
No kidding. Yeah.
Because that looks impressive to say the least.
Yep. Heavy reliability on Thunderbolt.
Yep.
6 Thunderbolts on all of these things.
Not surprising though.
Yep.
Especially if Apple's trying to push Thunderbolt, and they're pushing the whole idea that you can have three 4K displays being pushed by this thing, which is a huge number of pixels to start off with.
Yep.
All of them come out, Apple's using faster RAM, fastest RAM they've ever used now.
Yep.
So it's technically overclocked DDR3. Yep. The next gen Xeon processors.
Yeah, I like that. But they're actually Ivy Bridge series.
Well, yeah. But still,
there aren't Haswell Xeons yet, so that makes sense.
And their crazy fast RAM, which is apparently benching at 1.1 gigabits. Was it 1.1 gigs write and one read?
Oh, you're talking about the SSD.
The
SSD is 1.1 gigabits per second both ways.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. That's for those of you keeping score at home, that's about double what your typical solid-state drive does.
Yep. So I want to know how they're getting that. All I can assume is that they're increasing the number of pipes going to it, but who knows?
All right. So that was a solid, where are we at, 25 minutes on Apple?
Yep, about that.
All right, let's...
We're not even going to talk about Mavericks?
Oh, we want to talk about... totally forgot about Mavericks. All right, let's talk about some of the software and then move on.
Okay. Mavericks, Apple's doing first thing they... well, something first thing that anyone's ever done, essentially, besides Linux. Free operating system.
Cough. Well, yes, they are. They are providing Mavericks for free, which I think is extraordinarily courteous of them, because traditionally they've charged $30 in recent years, $20, I think, for Mountain Lion.
Yep.
And going back far enough, $150 to upgrade from Tiger to Leopard.
Yep.
So it's unique for Apple to be offering free operating systems. However, in my opinion, everything that they've done since Snow Leopard, I think, was the last big upgrade I think they've introduced in a while.
Yep.
I personally felt like a lot of the things they introduced after Snow Leopard were basically equivalent to Windows Service Packs.
Okay.
Which have always been provided for free.
Okay. This might be the first one where because there were significant changes under the hood on how it was
dealing
with.
Fair enough. Yeah, Mavericks is actually a pretty big upgrade.
The other ones were probably closer to Service Packs.
Yes.
This one I would argue is more than just a Service Pack.
Closer to a new OS. It's funny that it launched right around the same time as the 8.1 upgrade, which is effectively a big Service Pack for Windows 8, also available for free. However, to my experience, Windows 8.1 doesn't work very well, which I think is right in line with Mavericks, because to my experience, my little experience, I'm not really a Mac user anymore.
Okay.
Mavericks does not work very well.
Which is interesting, because I've been having great success with it. But
there have been a couple of issues. In particular, Mavericks doesn't seem to want to function without passwords.
Yep.
If you have a password on your Mac, you're never going to run into this issue. But Keychain on Mavericks is an atrocity. Very frequently, I've been hearing reports about this at work. I've been dealing with it personally at work.
I bet you it's related to the iCloud Keychain stuff.
It probably is. But there's this huge disaster for people who don't have passwords on their Macs, trying to use, and you'll log in on Keychain and say, this needs to use this, and this needs to use this, and you'll try and leave it blank, which is your Mac password, and you won't be able to. So Mavericks is apparently getting over a few password-related glitches with Keychain.
Well, hopefully there will be an update sort of within the next couple of weeks that addresses that.
People who experience this bug while the bug is active seem to say it's not working. It's a little less stable than usual. But other than that, issue, yes, it seems to work just fine.
Yep. People I know have also noticed that if you've got an older device and you install it and the battery is on, let's say, its last legs, you actually get really bad performance out of it, because apparently it does a lot of throttling based on the quality of your battery.
Interesting.
Because it's trying to manage, like some of the big upgrades in it, it's trying to manage how it uses power.
Right.
And if you've got a battery that is failing degraded.
Even if it's plugged in?
Even if it's plugged in.
Wow.
So that's another interesting thing. I mean, mine's, a year and a half old. I've got Mavericks installed on it. It's working flawlessly.
Yep.
But I have a couple of my friends on Twitter have been complaining about various issues. So.
I believe it. Interesting. We'll keep an eye on it anyway. Maybe they can patch it somehow.
Hopefully they can.
More interesting to me on the software front this week, beyond Mavericks. We'll summarize it real quick. All in all, you're happy with the changes in Mavericks?
All in all, I'm happy with the changes in Mavericks.
Good. More interesting for me on the software front this week was the triumphant return of iWork.
Yep.
And its free availability.
Yep.
Which is remarkable for me. That's something that Microsoft is not keeping up with.
Yep.
iWorks is a pretty powerful set of tools, particularly Keynote, which is one of my favorite tools for editing presentations in general.
Yep. I think for a while it's almost been considered sort of the de facto for presenting.
It's funny, I can watch a lot of commercials on TV now and recognize some of the effects and transitions as being Keynote exclusive things that aren't available in any other software that I'm aware of. And I can be like, this commercial was made in Keynote.
Yeah.
But really remarkable that a lot of the iLife and iWork updates and stuff are all free.
Yep.
So
especially if you buy a new device, you're getting it for free as well.
Exactly. So if you don't have Keynote Pages and Numbers, now's a good time to go get them. If for some reason you're using a Mac that doesn't have iLife, now's a good time to go get the new versions of iMovie and GarageBand.
Yep. I've actually installed all of them because I've got them on my iTunes account.
And the question would almost be, why wouldn't you have all of them?
Yeah.
They're all good pieces of software. Well, if you're not doing any music, I understand why you don't need GarageBand, but they're all good pieces of software.
Yep.
And they're all free.
Yeah.
Get them.
They're great. I mean, and especially like if you're taking a look at things like GarageBand and iMovie, the nice thing about those is it allows someone who isn't necessarily a full-time music producer or videographer to have the majority of those tools still at their hands.
Like a great number of tools, yeah.
For a relatively cheap price point. And if you do
Zero.
Well, exactly. Previous it was a little bit, but right, anyways. Yeah. But even with that, if you do decide to make a career of it,
it gives you you have the base, you have the start, and you can buy your way into something more powerful.
And the integration and the way that the Logic, for example, will read all of your GarageBand files.
Right.
And you can just directly go into Logic.
That's a good transition for Apple to try and sell Logic and Final Cut.
Yep.
And the other nice, speaking about reading files, if you're a Microsoft Office user, Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, they don't do it natively, but they do have good import-export functions for Office files.
Yep.
So if you need to be working in an Office environment, but you want to use the Apple software, they're really, really strong free alternatives. They offer more, at least I'm fairly certain they offer a lot more than their open Office equivalents.
Yeah.
So if you're a Mac user and you want some free software, the iWork and iLife suite are pretty good tools for nothing.
Yep.
All right, let's step away from Apple and
they've had their time.
Yes, certainly.
This week.
This has been an Apple podcast this week, brought to you by Apple.
Yep.
Apple sponsor us. That'd be good.
I would love that.
Give me a new iPhone. Sponsor us. All right, let's move on.
All right. So, last week we talked about BBM because it was launching.
Right. BBM, I think, launched day of podcast last
week. Yes, it did.
And one of the issues both of us ran into, was that if you wanted to play with it at all, you had to get yourself in line. They had a gated system to try and prevent their servers from crashing, which is something that happened to them preemptively in September when they tried to roll out the first time.
It's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea. And I understood why they were doing it. The line for me was only a couple hours anyway.
The same with me.
It wasn't too bad. The line is now gone, for those of you who want to just go
use
download
it.
BBM. Yeah. But BBM kind of came out to some mixed reviews.
Well, and if my Facebook feed is any sort of address of this, there were a lot of people that were actually vehemently opposed to getting it.
So the word you were looking for was indication.
Yes, that's it.
And yes, there were a lot of people who seemed to be confused as to why we would go back to BBM.
Yep.
It was a no-brainer for me. I think BBM is a great, powerful, very useful, highly secure tool that is particularly good for cross-platform and off-network messaging.
Yep.
Because it supports Wi-Fi.
And I'd rather use it over WhatsApp.
And that's a personal choice, but we'll get back to why you should use it over WhatsApp. The Verge is the link that we're going to put up in our show notes, and they address it. I'm going to go through their summary and why I think
it's a pretty good summary.
It's a good summary. I feel like the Verge missed a mark here. So their list of good things is that BBM is back, which is a dumb good thing. it's free, which is a relevant good thing. And sending and receiving messages is snappy. And accompanying that is, of course, BBM's famous read receipts, which is really useful tool. Bad stuff. Ugly design.
That's personal taste.
They say few features. We're going to come back to that.
Yep.
Not truly multi-platform.
I'm assuming that's because they don't have a Windows application.
The way Facebook would, but like WhatsApp doesn't. WhatsApp being the probably largest... we'll come back to this.
Yep.
An outdated friending system, which we're going to come back to again.
Yep.
So also in the show notes, there's a great little chart that explains why The Verge is missing the mark and why you should go use BBM. Number one, BBM's largest direct competitor is WhatsApp.
Yes.
WhatsApp, I forget, the number is ridiculous.
People could argue Google Chats Hangouts or Facebook, but they're a whole different platform.
The argument is there. Skype's an argument.
The same way.
Facebook is an argument. I think their biggest direct competition is WhatsApp. It's a mobile cross-platform messaging system that uses wireless data instead of text messaging.
Correct.
And unlike just regular SMS messages, it can use Wi-Fi as opposed to needing a network connection.
Right.
Now, WhatsApp costs 99 cents. Not a huge expenditure, but it costs 99 cents.
Yep.
It handles dozens of billions of messages a day, which to me makes it the biggest competitor. It's ridiculous how many WhatsApp messages go through in a day.
Yep.
It does support regular text chat. It does have a couple of important features. Its two biggest downfalls, to my opinion, are the fact that it doesn't actually provide proper read receipts, just delivery receipts.
Correct.
The two check marks in WhatsApp, everyone always thinks they mean delivery and read, just like BBM would do. They actually mean delivery to server, which is just successful sending of message.
And delivery to device.
And delivery to device, which is they've received it on the other end. But never does it tell you if they've actually read it, which is something that you can get from BBM.
Natively.
Natively. It's just part of the deal. BBM is better at handling group chats than WhatsApp is. WhatsApp is a little bit sloppy when it comes to the integration of that.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, and this is the outdated friending system, BBM uses pins, which is significant for me because I get spam text messages. This is a real thing. My number is out there. People can send me spam text messages.
I get the same thing.
If I'm using WhatsApp, my messages come in based off my phone number. So I have to give my phone number to somebody to get WhatsApp messages, but that means that I can just as easily get WhatsApp spam. Much more difficult to get BBM spam because of the pin system, which inherently makes it more private and secure.
Not to mention, you have to ask to receive that message. You have to confirm with the person that you want to add them as a contact.
They call it outdated. I call it privacy. I call it control. It gives me more options of who I'm talking to and who I don't want to talk to.
Correct.
And for that, I actually applaud BBM. And I mean, I'm biased and I want to support the home field company here, but I think BBM's done a really great job. The chart that we put up is going to explain why it's more useful than Skype or WhatsApp. Most specifically, that BBM is the only messaging client that's free that also supports, you know, voice calls and voice messages, has the delivery confirmation, is good for groups, has all kinds of different group management systems.
Yep.
And lets you store your contacts in the cloud.
And you can even have a status update.
Yeah.
So that you could say, going on a plane now, won't get your message for X hours.
So, in short, BBM good, Verge wrong.
Correct.
I think this is a really strong platform. I'm glad to see BlackBerry still making good software like they always have.
And making relevant software. That's the more important
part. Absolutely. I think this is still a relevant platform, and I hope it really takes off. If you want to... anyone that I know who's listening to this, my BBM pin is on my Facebook wall. You should be communicating with me through BBM more than anything else.
Or iMessage. If you've got an Apple device, use iMessage.
Yeah, fair enough. iMessage is a really strong tool for people who have Apple devices.
Yeah.
But BBM, I think, is the best cross-platform tool out there.
Yep.
I think it's far superior to everything else that's been offered, unless for some reason you desperately need a desktop access to it, like computer access to it.
Yep.
Use Skype or Facebook, fine.
Yep.
But barring
I would actually rather use Google over Facebook, personally. Because I actually dislike, one of the things I dislike about using Facebook Messenger, for example, as my sort of chatting software is that I don't actually want Facebook having access to that content. I know that Google is just as big a threat from the standpoint of mining your data, but I actually trust Facebook less than I trust Google. But for me, that's a personal thing. At the end of the day, if you want, use whatever is convenient, obviously. But if you're going to use something, you know, choose what's going to work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's important. I want to read a quote here from, this isn't a professional quote or anything, this is a friend of mine who I think hit the nail on the head when it came to BBM. There was a lot of questions about why you'd use BBM at all.
I think this was a conversation on my wall.
On your Facebook wall.
Yes.
This is really good. There was a discussion about why one would use BBM at all over some of these other platforms and what made it even significantly better than texting. And his argument was great. He pulled it a step back farther and said, why would you even discuss texting? If you're going to knock BBM, go back one step farther and choose email.
Yep.
The best counter platform to BBM is actually email. What do any of these pieces of software do that email hasn't done since the invention of the internet?
Yep.
People can get email to their phones now. Most casual users probably couldn't really answer the question about why email and BBM are any different, other than one is aesthetic or easy to access. But if what you need is to send a message to somebody via cellular data and nothing else, your old pal email has had your back since circa 1993. He goes on to explain some of the group management features are really what sets it apart. But in general, I think BBM is a really great, relevant platform that should and can be used by, at this point, pretty well everybody.
The one thing I liked,
Windows Phone users.
Well, yeah. The one thing I actually really liked about his argument as well was that for him, he had to get a BlackBerry for work. He didn't want to ditch his iPhone because he loves the iPhone.
Yes.
But he didn't want to ditch it. So he got a BlackBerry. And as soon as this came out, he sold his BlackBerry and got an iPhone with BBM.
Day of, he sold his BlackBerry. He started selling his BlackBerry, and he bought himself an iPhone outright. He needed it. He needed BBM for work. There was no requirement that he had a BlackBerry. It was just BBM. This was an easy solution for him. And from that end, BlackBerry pushing, again, I've been talking about BB Fusion a few times. It's called something different now. But for them to be pushing this BYO, bring your own device option, good. Go BlackBerry. Keep pushing these software solutions because they're brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on.
You know this one better than I do. Take it.
Basically, LinkedIn has pushed out a feature for phones that allows you to basically compromise the security of every single email address you have. So they in the guts
what
of it.
What a good feature.
In the guts of it, it's called LinkedIn Intro. And for anyone listening to this, don't get it, period. We do not recommend this, or at least I do not. The idea behind it is that you get to push all of your email content, so your IMAP and your POP email addresses, through LinkedIn servers so that they can parse your email and pull out the relevant information, attach, say, you should connect with this person type information, so that you can then create a better LinkedIn professional profile. The problem is that for encrypted servers, it's going to cause issues around the whole encryption problem. More importantly, if anyone hacks into LinkedIn servers, your emails are compromised instantly. This is bad news bears. I understand what they're trying to do.
Yeah, the features they're trying to introduce are reasonable, but the method of implementation and the risk, I mean, I feel like LinkedIn is putting a target on their back by doing this.
Pretty much.
If a couple million users do this and someone gets in, that's a huge amount of information that just became freely available.
Oh, yeah. So I think I like the idea of it. It's something that Google has obviously been doing with their whole Gmail platform around sort of targeted ads within your email browser. And even Outlook's doing the same type of thing. But there's an inherent difference between Google and Outlook doing it, where your email is actually being hosted by them.
Well, and to be fair, email is not the most secure platform on the internet.
No.
As an institution.
If you want to transfer data securely, you have to take other steps.
Yeah, but there's no reason to go out of your way to give yourself a security hole.
Exactly.
I understand what LinkedIn is trying to do. It's a bad plan. Don't sign up for this.
At least not in its current incarnation.
Use LinkedIn. LinkedIn's a good platform. Yes. Don't sign up for this.
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on.
You got this one too.
Well, okay.
I'll chime in here and there. Carry on.
So Seagate has introduced Seagate. Everyone's one of our You either like Seagate or Western Digital for your hard drive maker.
Yeah, you're either... Everyone seems... This is a very divided thing. You're in a camp on this. You like Western Digital and you hate Seagate or the other way around. You don't kind of think they're both okay. You either... It's a love-and-hate thing. But let's talk about Seagate.
Seagate is introducing a very interesting new idea. And basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to, for large area storage networks, they're trying to remove the server. This is something that Google and Facebook have been doing with their own in-house built servers and proprietary systems. But basically what it does is they're introducing a new drive interface, and it's Ethernet.
I want to qualify that.
Okay.
This is an Ethernet drive interface.
Yep.
This is not, for example, an external hard drive that has a SATA interface that adapts to an Ethernet connection.
Correct.
Which needs its own assigned address and its own everything. This is an Ethernet drive that does not think it's SATA. It's direct to Ethernet.
Yes.
Which is relevant. We'll get to it.
And with that comes, obviously, having to communicate with other drives directly. So there's a little bit of server infrastructure in there. Minimal, negligible. But basically, the idea is to... For large data areas, remove the complexity of having to store all of your information.
And remove the controllers for managing data.
Yes.
By doing what they're doing and having everything integrate via Ethernet, they effectively can have the drives integrate together almost as if they were one disk. It can be controlled similar to... I don't want to say similar to a NAS. They can be controlled basically as one system, which means that stuff like file addresses and determining what has to sit where is going to disappear.
Yep.
Expanding the system is as easy as just hooking in more Ethernet drives.
Yep.
Not SATA converted Ethernet, direct Ethernet drives, which makes it really useful for people who need to do large storage.
Oh yeah. For say web hosting servers,
cloud hosting, web hosting, any kind of server infrastructure, it's really convenient for them.
Large corporate structures.
And it also enables an organization to easily increase the amount of storage in their system.
Correct.
Which is another incredibly useful feature.
Well, and that's always been one of the things with the large, they're called SANs, and is that you have to spend a lot of money if you need to increase your capacity.
Right. And that's something that a lot of the tech giants kind of have to think over when they create data centers.
Yeah.
is how much storage do we want to put in this room?
Well, and especially when you're dealing with triplicate levels of redundancy just in a SAN,
right?
So that you're dealing with three or four levels of mirroring and RAIDs and things like that, just to make sure that if a drive dies, you are not completely screwed over.
Right.
If another drive dies.
Yep.
The one thing that I don't think the article touches on is how you're going to get around those issues of backing up and managing it. But I'm sure that's something that will over time.
It'll be interesting to see. Because of the way RAID controllers work now, it'll be interesting to see what sort of backup and redundancy controllers have to be made for these, and are they going to be different or the same, or does RAID work across four of these Ethernet drive? There's maybe not kinks to work out. Maybe Seagate's got the solution to these problems, but they haven't started talking about them yet.
Yep. So it will certainly be interesting to see where that goes. I mean, I made the argument before the show that this is even useful for something like a small business.
Yep.
Because if you can decrease the cost for a business to expand, not only from their data storage, but as a company grows, like this is something that I take a look at. Like currently my business is a one man shop.
Right.
If I go to a two or three person shop, how do I manage the data and the workflow and things like that, so that it's expandable and you don't reach choke points.
Yep.
And something like this might be, depending on the cost,
something might be a solution to that.
You know, if you can get big corporate solutions for the same cost as a small corporate solution or small business solution, that changes the playing field.
Right.
So
we'll see.
All right. Let's go into the gaming sphere of things.
Let's go into everyone's least favorite product. Maybe my least favorite product. I don't know why this thing's a thing.
Well, actually, funny story. Yesterday I was in IKEA and CP24 was playing on a television and they were actually promoting this thing.
I don't understand what the Ouya is for or who would use it or why. I don't get it.
It's a low cost
gaming platform. Lets you take advantage of some of the good Android games that are out there. You can stream XBMC content to it from your computer.
Yep.
I understand it has its uses. I have a hard time figuring out why it blew up the way it did. And my understanding from almost every review that I've read after it was released was regret.
Yes.
But let's talk about the Ouya, because there's Ouya news.
There is Ouya news. They will be coming to Target.
That's actually good for them.
That is good for them.
Let's not knock it. Target has 1,800 stores in the United States.
And that's pretty big.
50 in Canada or whatever. That's 1,800 stores is pretty big.
Yeah.
Previous to this, the Ouya was only available online. So that's good for them. Ouya coming to 1,800 Target stores.
It will be interesting to see how, if that does change the game market at all, whether you start to see more games being developed for it or ported or...
They have some of their own software issues to kind of clean up, and it's addressed in the article. I'm not going to get into it too much. The other big problem with Ouya at this point is, I mean, it was current hardware when it was announced to be released 10 months later.
Yeah.
And it's now old hardware.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it's not like it's Ivy Bridge to Sandy Bridge, kind of 1 year. It's 1 year back, but it's the steps are bigger because these mobile chips are still emerging. So it's a huge... The Tegra 3 that's in it is a huge step back from this year's Tegra 4.
And next year's Tegra 5.
Is going to beat both of them to the curb.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's the Ouya is something that I don't quite understand. But it's really impressive to see them expanding this quickly. It's really remarkable to have them get picked up by Target.
Yep.
And they are trying to address some of the software issues that they've been having with their store and some other issues.
Yep.
So good for them. They seem to be listening to criticism. It'll be interesting to see how they progress forward.
Well, it'll also be interesting to see if thing like I'm just spitballing here, but maybe Steam will adopt it or something like that. Like, who knows?
It would be interesting if when they get a hardware upgrade in the inevitable Ouya 2 or 3, if it's significantly powerful enough to be a Steam OS box.
Which would be very cool.
At that point, I would jump on the bandwagon.
Yes.
That would be big enough for me.
Yep.
Even if it didn't have enough power to actually run Steam games, but it took advantage of the Steam OS streaming features from a full power computer.
Yep.
That would do it for me.
Yep. All right, so one last story before we get into the stuff you want to talk about. The PlayStation 4, it's been announced, won't play Blu-rays or DVDs out of the box.
Yeah, that seems like an oversight.
Now, there will be an update ready for everyone day one.
Yeah, and that's important. And to be fair, we're not picking on Sony here. Microsoft has already announced they're going to have a day one update also.
Yep. It's interesting that the update is to fix Blu-ray and DVD playback.
Yeah, because you think that would be a given out of the box, right? Like, Sony is Blu-ray, right?
Exactly.
So the PS3 did it out of the box. I don't understand. It's funny that that's the update they're releasing, but it's not surprising. Consoles typically have day one updates. The Wii U, when it released last year, had a huge, like, gigabyte and a half patch to update.
Yep.
So it's interesting that they need that.
And this will be a 300 meg update.
It's a little bit disappointing that those are the features when they've been trying to push their console as the one that doesn't need connectivity all the time.
Yeah.
And yet here's a situation where you have to hook it up if you just want to watch a movie.
Here's the console that you can just use whenever after you've updated it.
Which is kind of funny because that's the same thing that Microsoft said.
Yeah.
You have to hook it up to the internet one time and after that you're off the hook. But... like, they got panned even for that.
Yeah.
And here's Sony saying, well, you don't have to hook it up to the internet unless you want to use it for the features that it's got, and then you do have to hook it up to the internet one time. It's kind of funny that this is such a big, key, core entertainment feature that is just being omitted. I don't know the specifics behind it, if they've had trouble with the manufacturing or if maybe a firmware thing has been
released. Yeah, something like that.
But it's funny to me that that's... it's funny to me that that's the update.
Yeah.
You cannot watch a movie unless you get it installed. And I'm sure there's a reason for it, but it's still funny to me.
Yep.
I did have something I wanted to discuss, but it's not time relevant. It's something we can go through next week.
Okay.
It's by no means something we have to do this week. So
let's move it to next week.
Let's can my stuff, move it to next week, and move on to picks of the week.
All right. So my pick of the week, it's actually a couple of weeks old. It's an iOS game. It's called Pocket Trains. It's by the same company that put out Pocket Planes, Nimble Bit. And arguably, I didn't play the first game. I kind of glossed over it. This one came up in the App Store for free. And if a game comes out for free, hey, I'll at least play it. It's an 8-bit... it's an 8-bit game, and the premise of it is that you're mastering and moving cargo around the globe on these 8-bit trains. It's a fairly simple premise, but I'm thoroughly addicted to it. I actually really love train games. It's part of my background. So, you know, I saw this come up, and of course, my wife at home, you know, I'll pop it open while I'm eating breakfast, and she'll just roll her eyes. But hey, it works. It's a fun game. It's free to get. There's obviously what we've gotten used to with the whole in-game transactions. I haven't spent a dime on it yet, but I'm still having fun with it.
Good stuff.
So,
my pick is actually similar-ish to an extent, not at all. But the premise is the same. I actually picked a game this week as well. Specifically, the great new game released on Steam this week called Path of Exile.
Yep.
Path of Exile is another great game that I've really been getting myself into that is free to play, completely free to play, start to finish, with a whole bunch of microtransactions that you can purchase through if you want. They're almost entirely cosmetic,
mm-hmm.
And the ones that aren't cosmetic have very little in-game function. The game itself is similar to Diablo, if that's going to give you some qualifier. It's an incredibly detailed and in-depth game. One of the big criticisms of Diablo 3 was that it got oversimplified. This game does not have that problem.
Whoops.
The look up the skill trees. You'll understand what I'm talking about. Okay. You need a wall-sized poster to chart them out. But it does feature some microtransactions for things like stash tabs. If you've played a Diablo-style game, you'll know what that means.
Yep.
Or extra character slots. There are things you can buy that are certainly worth money. But most of the things that you can buy are cosmetic. They give you no functional advantage in-game, which means that you can enjoy basically everything the game has to offer start to finish without paying any money, if that's how you want to do it.
Yep.
But the game itself is called Path of Exile. It's visually stunning. The combat and functionality of it is very polished and very well done. And it kind of feels a little more like a successor to Diablo 2 than Diablo 3 does, because enough got changed between those two games that Diablo 3 did not take off the way it should have.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see what the update to it.
Yeah, the new expansion that's coming out eventually in Blizzard time. But quite a good game if you like that kind of isometric hack and slash sort of thing. Dungeon crawler, that's the word I was looking for.
Yes.
Take a look, Path of Exile, completely free to play, available on Steam.
I will have to check that out.
Quite good.
Very cool. All right. Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, if that's all, for this episode of the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 48 on October 28th, 2013, I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Adam Forrestal.
Thank you and have a great night.